This is a Fern podcast. My name is Damien Lee. Kavaljeet Singh is the director of Public Interest Research Center, a policy research institute based in New Delhi. He is the author of three widely published books, Questioning Globalization, Taming Global Finance Flows, and The Globalization of Finance, A Citizen's Guide. Apart from English language editions, these three books have been published in several languages, including Thai, Japanese, Chinese, Arabic, Swedish, Bahasa, and Tagalog. On April 27, 2007, I had the extreme pleasure to talk to Kavaljeet about his new book, Why Investment Matters. What you'll hear next is the Skype conversation I had with Kavaljeet Singh about his new book.
Hi, I'm Kavaljeet Singh. I'm from New Delhi, India, where I work with a research institute called Public Interest Research Center. This is a policy think tank working on developmental issues, issues concerning foreign investment, and financial issues.
Okay, thank you. Can you tell me a little bit about why you wrote the book called Why Investment Matters, The Political Economy of International Investments?
The idea of the book came in a meeting which was organized in 2004 at Amsterdam by NGOs. We had a large number of activists, researchers, and campaigners who are either working on World Bank IMF issues or trade issues, and some of them who are working on investment issues. They all came together. And in that meeting, it was decided that we should have a popular publication which should serve as an educational tool to address the investment issues to a larger audience, which is a non-specialist audience, which does not understand the dynamics of investment issues, and this publication should help them to understand what are the different types of investment flows, how investment flows have changed over the years, who are the main players such as private equity funds and transnationals from the South, who could be the major potential allies in campaigning against transnational corporations, who could be the potential opponents which we foresee while campaigning on investment issues. Also, the book should address certain other critical issues, such as are voluntary codes of conduct the best way to deal with corporations, or shall we need state regulations and supervision to regulate the activities of transnational corporations? What are the leverage points and spaces to influence and democratize investment? And what should be the key elements of building a campaign against investment issue? So broadly speaking, these were the parameters which were discussed in that meeting and later on. And based on these parameters, I have prepared this book.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. What are your views on international investments?
In my view, it's very too simplistic to say that all investments are good or all investments are bad. My view, there are three critical issues which we need to understand as far as foreign investments are concerned. Firstly, what is the quality of foreign investment? Is foreign investment creating new jobs? Is foreign investment augmenting productive assets and sectors of the economy? Is foreign investment bringing new and safe technology? Is foreign investment contributing to tax revenue? Is it crowding in domestic investment, or is it displacing domestic investments? Also, I think it's very important to ask a fundamental question, whether more investment means more money coming into the country or more money going out of the country, because there are several developing countries, particularly in Africa, which have experienced more capital outflows instead of capital inflows as a result of investment liberalization. In countries like Botswana, Congo, Mali, and Nigeria, profit remittance by transnational corporations are much, much higher than the actual FDI inflows. The second issue is that foreign investment is not a panacea. There is no country in the world which has solely developed on the basis of foreign investment. I remember in 2002, we had a big summit organized by UN on financing for development. I also took part in that summit as an NGO representative. And all the top officials of the World Bank, IMF, regional banks, transnational corporations, lobby groups, and think tanks, which generally favor greater foreign investment in the developing countries, were present. And I asked them a very simple question. I said, there are more than 180 countries in the world. Could you name one country which has solely or substantially developed on the basis of foreign investment? And to my surprise, they could not even name one country. See, the basic issue is, and I think the policy makers should really address this issue, that at best, foreign investment can supplement domestic investment. It cannot substitute domestic investment. And in the rarest of the cases, foreign investment can act as a catalyst of economic growth, but nothing more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And the third important critical issue to my mind is that the benefits of foreign investment would not happen in a deregulated economy. You need to have proper regulation in place to ensure that the TNC do not indulge in anti-competitive and restrictive practices. They do not manipulate transfer pricing. They pay taxes. They transfer technology to the host economy. And they have stronger linkages with the domestic economy so that small and medium enterprises which are based in a domestic economy should also benefit out of it. So whatever benefits we wish to seek foreign investment, they would only happen if efficient and transparent regulatory and supervisory regime.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and given your views of international investments, do you see a backlash against foreign investments?
See, the attitudes towards foreign investment have always been changing in response to the global economic and political context. The investment pendulum has been swinging from one extreme to another. Just to give you an example, till the 1980s, the dominant thinking was that the TNCs are not desirable because they make the domestic economic policy making very difficult. Besides, they indulge in domestic political affairs. That is why there was an attempt made at the UN in the early 70s to draft a code of conduct for TNC to regulate their behavior in the host countries. So TNCs at that time were seen as part of problem. But we have also seen that in the 1980s and the 1990s, the pendulum had swung to another extreme. In this period, foreign investment was largely seen in a positive manner, which will bring economic growth, which will lift people out of poverty. So FDI, which was earlier seen as part of problem, was now seen as part of the solution. And I think now the attitudes, but particularly when we are talking in 2007, are again undergoing change. Let me give you a few examples. Look at several Latin American countries such as Bolivia, Ecuador, Argentina, and Venezuela. These countries are renegotiating contracts with TNCs to get more benefits from their investments, such as more tax revenue and transferring the ownership of gas and oil fields and other assets to the state. There is a greater concern now to protect strategic resources, such as oil and gas. Despite strong pressure from the EU, Russia has refused to ratify the Energy Charter Treaty. There are other examples where countries are reclaiming their hold on strategic resources. In India, for instance, National Security Council has proposed a new law under which Indian government can prohibit any merger or acquisition of the Indian company under the strategic issue. In China, there is a growing debate on foreign investment in the banking sector. In Germany, UK, Korea, and other places, the private equity funds and hedge funds have come under greater criticism. Also, we need to keep in mind that the corporate scandals from Enron to WorldCom to Parmalat a few years back have seriously dented the image and reputation of TNCs. Outsourcing, which is a major political issue in many developed countries because they fear the loss of white-collar jobs, is also acting as an impediment for foreign investment. We should also keep in mind that the disputes between the TNCs and the host governments have now reached an alarming level. This shows that the honeymoon, which was there in the 1990s, is by and large over. Also, we need to keep in mind the recent developments which is happening in both developing and developed countries is the concept of economic nationalism, and a greater assertion of national identities is gaining ground. And now this kind of an environment and is not very conducive for foreign investments. And finally, I think the promises made by the foreign investment have not really occurred. People were told that once you get foreign investment, everything would be fine. You will get higher economic growth, you will be lifted out of poverty, you will become rich. Now that has not really happened to a vast majority of people. A few people have certainly benefited out of this process, but for the vast majority of people which do not have financial resources or skills to benefit from foreign investments, they haven't really got any benefit out of it. So there is a genuine disillusionment with foreign investment in many countries. And I see all these developments are going to certainly play a major role in building a backlash against the foreign investment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Given that, what strategies would you recommend to bring transnational corporations under the democratic control of people in governments?
In my view, there is no one-size-fits-all approach in terms of strategizing against transnational corporations or bringing them under the democratic control of the people and the host governments. I think the strategy would vary from country to country. Even within a country, we have found, for instance, in India, that campaigners have used different kind of strategies to deal with transnational corporations. For instance, the popular campaign against Coke was largely based on the mobilization of people, the communities which were directly affected by this project in the state of Kerala. Whereas the other campaign against the Union Carbide, the activists, the campaigners took a much more legal action against the corporation. So there are different strategies which are to be used, and I have listed down several strategies, the past experiences of activist campaigners in dealing with the transnational corporations, and also in terms of dealing with transnational corporation, I have made a specific point here that when we are fighting against a particular transnational corporation, we should not restrict our campaign activities only on that corporation. We should go beyond that corporation. What I mean is that rather than solely focusing on that particular transnational corporation, we should look also at the domestic lobbies of transnational corporations, because often we have seen that there is a domestic support to the transnational corporations. This support could consist of big business houses, upper and middle classes, because they think that the foreign companies are giving them better products and services. Then you have industry lobbies, you have think tanks. So there is a whole lot of domestic constituency existing in our own countries which favor greater foreign investment. So what I have said in this book is that while you target your activities on that particular corporation and its activities, you should also look at the domestic components, the domestic counterparts of that corporation in the host countries. I have also taken a stand in this book that there is too much emphasis in certain quarters on voluntary code of conducts. There is nothing per se having voluntary code of conducts, but we should remember that these codes are voluntary, they cannot be enforced, they are limited to a few brands such as Nike or others where brand image is very important, and they are no substitute to the state regulation. So I have said very clearly in my book that activists should focus more on the regulatory aspects of bringing these corporations under the national regulatory framework. Because in the absence of a national regulatory framework, it would be much easier for the corporations to do whatever they want. And we need to reinforce the state regulatory and supervisory role. Also, I have mentioned in this book that national space is very important. Although we need to have trans-border alliances with the like-minded groups and activists, but national space, as far as the regulation is concerned, is very much important. In the book, I have also stressed to build on cross-sector linkages, which at the moment are very weak. For instance, investment issues are directly related with trade issues. They are related with competition policy issues. But we find that as far as the campaigners and activists are concerned, there is a one set of activists who exclusively work on trade issue, there is another set of activists who work on investment issue, and then there is another one who works exclusively on competition policy. There are very, very limited exchange of information, and the linkages are not very strong. So we need to build cross-sector linkages among the social movements, among the NGOs, to have a better coordinated campaign.
Thank you very much, Kavaljeet, for sharing your thoughts with us today. And I wish you the best of luck.
My pleasure.
You just heard Kavaljeet Singh talking about his new book, Why Investment Matters. If you would like more information, or you would like to contact Kavaljeet, please contact Fern at www.fern.org or judith@fern.org. Fern is a non-governmental organization working to achieve greater environmental and social justice, focusing on forests and forest people's rights in the policies and practices of the European Union.